You're listening to the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym. Had a bad weekend? Need legal counseling? Student Legal Services at WSU is happy to help. Student Legal Services is a student-run organization and provides free legal advice to students. So if you need help, stop by their office in Ad Annex Room 305. They're open Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Friday, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Volunteers wanted. The Women's Transit is looking for drivers and dispatch volunteers. All volunteers will receive hands-on training. Cars, gas, and insurance are provided. Receive academic credit while giving back to the community. To sign up, come by Women's Resource Center at Wilson Hall, Room 8, or call 335-6849. KZUU DJs read public service announcements like what you just heard every hour. If your club or nonprofit organization wants us to read a PSA about you, come to our office in the Smith Gym, Room 126B, or fill out a form online located under the staff button and email it to psa@kzuu.org. For more information, call our office, 335-2208. If you want to get a hold of us in the studio, it's 335-2207. Today we're going to be talking at length about the tasering incident a couple weeks ago up on campus, actually two tasering incidences, as well as the surrounding media coverage. We would like to discuss the differences in both cases, as well as maybe some nationwide usage of tasers and whether a taser is the proper level of force. What is proper level of force? What is necessary? We're going to have a lot of stuff to discuss. If you want to get in on this, 335-2207. We have a special guest. He's a Crim J major, also a psychology major. His name is Brandon. How are you doing today, Brandon?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Scott?
Oh, not too bad. So we'll be back in about 2 minutes. Nope. About a minute and 40 seconds, and we'll get on with this. Welcome back. I'm hearing a little bit of a feedback in here, aren't you?
Yeah,
I don't know. I wonder if it's almost coming from your headphones.
You think?
Yeah, possibly.
Can you still hear it?
A little bit. We'll see what's going on. Sounds like your headphones are giving us some grief, though. We'll see how it works. We might be able to fix it over there. So, anyway, we have Brandon Coe. He's a Crib J and psychology major here at WSU. Why did you choose WSU?
Coming out of high school, I knew I wanted to go into law enforcement, so I initially wanted to be a CSI, and so I applied here because I knew the criminal justice program was pretty good, and I applied to Eastern as well, but Eastern really didn't give me some financial aid support, so really? I ended up coming here.
Wow. So you wanted to be a CSI. Is that still the case?
No, not so much.
Why is that?
Really, for CSIs, you have to do a lot of science, and while I enjoy science, I just don't really want to do it as a major.
Gotcha.
So
you've definitely gotten away from it. What made you want to go CSI, the TV shows?
No, actually, I've wanted to do it since first grade. My neighbor used to be the ballistics expert on the west side for the state patrol. And so he would tell me stories about, his cases and, testifying in court and stuff. And so
sounded like fun.
Yeah.
I want to do that.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's interesting.
You get to shoot guns.
Yeah.
Play around with stuff.
Well, I hear that, WSU, because of CSI shows and that those kinds of, NCIS, CSI, whatnot, the major of, that kind of study is actually getting bigger all over the place. And
yeah.
I know WSU supposedly is starting to make some classes that is in that realm, in the science department at least.
Yeah, I've heard they're trying to get forensic classes going, but
forensics, that was the word I was looking for, too.
Yeah,
thank you.
I know Eastern had just started one right around the time I was graduating, so that's actually why I applied there, but
okay.
Yeah, didn't end up going there. I think there's, at least last time I heard, was only they were only accepting 50 students a semester, a year, for that program, so
all right.
Pretty tough.
So, and that's once you declare your major, it's 50 people is what they're letting in a year.
I think so.
So it's pretty tough to get in, pretty hard. So,
yeah.
All right, so you chose to come to WSU, and of course that was a good choice this year for basketball, right?
Oh, yeah. Cougs are doing great.
You been going to many games?
Oh, yeah, I've been going to pretty much all the guys' home games.
Yeah?
Following them a lot.
Yeah, do you get a cheer too much?
I try.
Do you leave with a hoarse voice?
Yeah.
A real fan would.
Oh, yeah, they do.
Okay, good. How about the football games? You go to those?
I do.
So you're a big sports fan then?
I am.
What's your favorite sport?
I played baseball in high school, so I'd have to go with baseball.
Baseball, huh?
A little partial to baseball, yeah.
Do you play IM softball?
I do.
Really? With what team?
Just whichever friend wants me to play.
Yeah? Whoever gets to you first?
Yeah, pretty much.
Now, are you good is the question.
I'm pretty good.
What position do you play?
I can play anywhere, really. I usually play outfield.
You know how many people say that? Oh, I can play anywhere. Yeah, right. You cannot.
No, seriously. Like 10th grade summer league baseball, played every position but pitcher and right field.
Oh, okay.
So at least once during throughout the summer. So
yeah, so you can play pretty much anywhere, but you're an outfielder, more
yeah.
or less.
I was
a good arm.
Oh yeah, I was initially an outfielder, and then I caught a little too, and then in high school they brought me in to catch because we really didn't have a catcher.
Gotcha. So what about hitting? Are you a good softball hitter?
I'm a contact hitter, not really a power hitter, but. I get on base. I find ways to get on base.
So you hope that you hit it to the weak infielder who bobbles the ball?
No.
And with your speed at 60 feet, boom, you're on base. Is that what it is?
If I miss it, yeah. But usually I'll bloop one in or get a nice...
Texas leaguer.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll put one in right between the infielders and outfielders. So.
Okay. Well, that's a good place to get a hit if you're going to do it.
It is.
So... That's interesting. But with baseball, you're not doing any more baseball anymore. It's just pretty much your IM softball, huh?
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, that's too bad. You play any other IM sports?
I've played football a few times. Played in the intramural frisbee tournament the last 2 years.
Ultimate Frisbee, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
It's pretty fun. Picked it up when I came here. We ended up getting second, actually, 2 years ago. So.
Okay. Now, what kind of music do you listen to?
Mostly country.
Yeah?
I actually hated it before I came here, so WSU has changed me quite a bit.
WSU changed you to country. How did that happen?
I don't know. Could be the Eastern Washington thing. Could be friends. I don't know.
Man, and inside of Pullman, it's really hard to even find a country station, isn't it?
Not really.
Oh, come on. All we play on this show is the Reverend Horton Heat, favorite of the PES. So what kind of movies do you go to?
I go to a lot. Actually, I don't go to many now, but I like to see all sorts of movies. Action, drama, romantic comedies, whatever.
Romantic comedies?
Yeah.
You got a girlfriend?
No.
Oh, man. How do you go to romantic comedies, then?
You take a girl to them.
Okay. All right, so you're trying to get a girlfriend by taking her to the romantic comedy, showing you're a good guy.
Exactly.
So you are a good guy, right?
I am.
Okay. And what we're doing is I'm just trying to show that this is a normal person here. He's just like anybody else. But he saw something up on Greek Row at Mike's Bar that from his point of view was vastly different than the points of view that have been published in the newspapers over the last almost 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It's been, 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
It was Saturday night 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Saturday night, Sunday morning type thing. So there's been a lot of information flowing around about it. And one of the things, for those who have Facebook, there's a Facebook group where a lot of people have been talking about this situation where people were tasered up on campus. And what's interesting is the conversation has really gone quite a ways from the original parts where it was more or less almost name-calling at some point, people being called racist because of their point of view.
Yeah.
Even though it had nothing to do with race, it was just the fact that they were saying, well, I don't believe that this person is telling the whole story and he needs to stop lying when he writes in the newspaper. And because that was the opinion, this person's called racist, sort of a way to get them to be quiet. And then as time has gone on, I've noticed that the arguments have really shifted from what the original ones were, where the police used excessive force, to talking more general terms about a lot of things. So one of the first articles that came out in the newspaper, and that this is the interesting thing, is part of the conversations we've been having on there have dealt with the fact that newspapers are not the best source in the world to base your opinions on.
No.
We saw one of the letters to the editor by Alex McDonald, and his letter to the editor, I actually responded to him personally, and we had a conversation for a little while about a couple things. And his letter to the editor is largely based on hearsay and things that he's reading in the newspaper. People were arguing that the use of a taser is unwarranted in a lot of situations, especially when it deals with black people, and that the police are very readily, they're very quick to taser black people. And some of these comments were going into that to that vein, and they were putting up articles that were trying to support that kind of information. So I've been looking at some of these articles, and in most of these cases, or actually in all the cases of the articles that have been posted, first off, they're all cherry-picked articles. The articles are written in the almost the slant of the victim. And when I say victim, I mean the person who got hit with the taser, which is not necessarily a victim, maybe the suspect, depending on how you look at it.
Exactly.
But the point is that it's written in the point of view of that person. They get all the quotes or the majority of the quotes from that person. They get maybe one or two to go from the other side. And what happens is, like, in one case, there's a kid in Seattle who was tasered, and he was a black kid. So, therefore, we're supposed to believe by the little synopsis of the article and the link that for no reason this black kid gets tased. Well, I went in and I read the article, and as I got reading on it, you come to find out that the kid was resisting. He wouldn't get on the ground when he was told to get on the ground. He was going to be put under arrest, and he was resisting with them, and there was reason behind the tasing, not just because he was a black kid, but people want to make issues out of things that aren't really there. And like I had discussed with Mr. McDonald in some communications, if you are looking for something, you will find it.
Exactly.
If you are looking for something, if you want to think that there's racism somewhere, you can look hard enough, you will find it. And you can find it all over the place, even places where it's not, only because that's the point of view that you're looking at and you're trying to find something that appears to be racist. That's why people can try to argue that the only reason why Mr. Williams was tased that Saturday night was because he was black. But if you look at the situation surrounding it, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, you'll find that a white guy was tased in almost the exact same kind of situation. So really, to try to say that it was because he was black is a bad argument, but those who are trying to prove racism or trying to claim... Oh, geez. Those people who are trying to prove or claim that there's racism are using that kind of argument. So what I was actually – I go on tangents all the time. I'm sorry about that.
Don't worry.
But the point of what I was getting at is newspapers. Newspapers are very slanted. They give you one side of the story. They're not even always correct, which is very evident in our Daily Evergreen story. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is the Daily Evergreen story and the Daily News story have differences on the white guy. And I found this yesterday when I was going –
his name.
Yeah, when I was going through the two articles, and I thought that was really interesting because my feeling was that the way everybody is holding up newspapers as the ultimate source for proving racism, that these newspapers would be perfect and everything they said would be 100% dead on. But here we go in the Daily Evergreen, the article titled. Let's see here. Two men tasered on College Hill on Sunday. It was written by Jacob Jones. He says, officers tasered and arrested 23-year-old Miles Hubbard and 22-year-old Jaron Williams when they allegedly obstructed police officers in separate incidences on College Hill. I just knew the taser barbs in my jacket looked brand new, said Williams as he recounted the incident. And this was in reference to the fact that the police department just got new tasers. And what was interesting about that is that they don't reuse the barbs. They don't, like, put them back in the machine and reshoot them. So it wasn't a matter of that every single time they're going to look like they're brand new.
Well, that and if he was tasered in the back, which he was, and they arrested him before pulling him out, I would like to know how he saw the taser barbs.
Oh, come on. You're sounding like you have a conspiracy going on now.
Just a thought.
Just a thought. I like that thought. It's a good one. So Williams approached Officer Carl Bell when he was interrogating WSU graduate student Martin Boston outside of Mike's Bar on Campus Street. Pullman police officers were asking Boston about an alleged assault with the bouncer in the bar. Williams put himself between Bell and Boston. Bell told Williams touching an officer could be assault. Williams said he approached Bell and Martin as the officer was removing his flashlight from his belt. He removed the flashlight and extended his arm and pushed Williams back. It was like in an authority-type thing, said Williams, who was a University of Idaho student. And I thought that was sort of funny that he was saying what Carl Bell, the cop, was doing by pushing the guy away was an authority-type thing, because that's what Officer Bell is an authority.
That's what I would think.
So I just thought that was sort of funny that was a quote they used in there.
I really want to know the questions that they asked him before he gave those quotes, because they're just the quotes that he gives are pretty much ridiculous. Like, they don't give any facts of the matter. They're just his reaction to what happened.
Yeah, good point. As he moved back, Williams asked that Bell not touch him. Williams said Bell pushed back a second time, and he was tasered without warning before he could leave. Hubbard, the other guy, was arrested for disorderly conduct and obstructing a little more than an hour earlier, Tennant said. He was arrested on B Street for allegedly interrupting officers while they attempted to detain his brother. So that's the article from the Daily Evergreen. And the Daily News, written by Hillary Hamm, had this article, was put in the paper on the 15th. The Evergreens was on the 14th. So a day later, Hillary Hamm writes, a Sunday morning incident in which Pullman police officers used a taser to subdue a black man has renewed controversy over the Pullman Police Department's methods. A recent acquired taser was used on Jaron Williams, a black 22-year-old University of Idaho senior, as he walked away from police shortly before 2 a.m. outside Mike's bar. Some witnesses believe the force used was excessive and may have been racially motivated. Williams said the use of the taser was unnecessary, but he doesn't want to bring race into the mix. I just don't want to make this a racial thing. I hope it brings this community together. While it may seem like a racial thing, I saw people of all color saying it was wrong. It wasn't an injustice to me. It was an injustice to students. It's about the situation, not the race. And I do like that last thing he says right there. It was about the situation, not the race. Because that's something that we're going to talk about in a little bit, and we'll find out, yeah, in this situation, it was definitely warranted.
Yeah.
Or you could argue it was warranted.
Yeah.
I won't call the Pullman police racist or their actions racist, but I can't prove it, Boston said. I definitely think that this event was treated differently because of race, because of black males are viewed as criminals. Now, here's something I wanted to bring out before I go any further in the article. He says that the event was treated differently because of race. Well, there was an event identical to it an hour earlier, and the guy was treated just the same. So how are we treating people differently because of race? And then he says, because black males are viewed as criminals. I don't view black males as criminals, but if that's the stereotype he wants to assign to black males, I guess that's his right to do it. But I think that's – if you go around and start telling people that black males are viewed as criminals, isn't that what they're going to then start thinking?
Coming from a black man, yeah, I would assume.
So, I mean, why do you throw out stereotypes that people don't necessarily have unless you want them to start having that stereotype, unless you want to be in the role of the victim?
I guess we should ask Martin Boston.
Okay. Boston noted on that Sunday's incident happened within days of the closing of the 4-year-old class action lawsuit against the city of Pullman that claimed police officers used excessive force and were racially biased in their response to a reported fight in the now closed Hop China restaurant in 2002, which there was also a letter to the editor, or actually it was more of a column written by Mr. Estes, who is the lawyer involved in this whole situation, who pointed out the simple fact that this is a null and void point. Why are we continuing to bring it up? It's all wrongdoing has been shown that it wasn't there, and that it appears by the fact that it's being brought up by Mr. Boston that there's some bitter grapes going on there.
I would say so.
Officers are not required to give a warning, Tennant said, noting that touching Bell was enough to warrant the use of a taser. So earlier when Williams was saying, they didn't even warn me, they just hit me with it.
Mm-hmm.
According to Commander Tennant of the Pullman Police Department, they don't have to give a warning before using it. And that is an interesting point. It's like if somebody is going to get pepper sprayed, do you say, I'm going to pepper spray you. Make sure your eyes are wide open. No, you hit them with it. You have it hidden behind your leg or behind your back, and you get them as quickly as possible while their eyes are open, because that's the whole point is that it causes pain. It causes so they can't see. If their eyes are closed, it's not as effective.
It's a distraction.
So with the taser, why would you say, excuse me, I'm about to tase you. Don't run, otherwise I might miss.
Well, I mean, there are instances where you would say, I'm going to tase you. But
definitely.
I mean, like, there are instances where you can do it, and then there are instances where you can't.
Sure.
Like the one earlier in the evening, Mr. Hubbard, it's actually Henry Hubbard, not Miles Hubbard, as Evergreen states, he shoved Officer Bell and then ran away immediately after.
Wow, that sounds like a really... okay. I was going to make some editorial comment here about the fact that he's such a man that he can push somebody and run away. And, I mean, if you're going to start a fight, fight.
Yeah.
Don't be a wimp about it. Push somebody and then go running away. Ooh, yeah. You're tough. Interesting. Okay, let me finish out this article real quick, and then I'll. You can yell and scream all you want, but you can't touch an officer. Tenet said, "Tasers prevent fistfights and prevent cop brawls. It's a tool to take somebody under control," which I think that's a great point right there. Taser prevents fistfights and prevents cop brawls, and that's a very good point. There's no hands on going on here. It was excessive force to use a taser. And this is Mr. Boston speaking again. It was excessive force to use a taser. Even if Officer Bell was justified in arresting him for the use of the taser on him, when there was plenty of backup around, I think it was just way, way, way excessive. He was unarmed, not confrontational, nothing like that. There was no merit to use a taser gun. Police could have easily taken him down. And I like that right there. Police could have easily taken him down. So what Boston is saying is, rather than using a taser, which gives you about 5 seconds of discomfort, and then it's over with.
It's essentially paralyzing.
Boston would have rather seen 4 or 5 cops tackle the guy and throw him on the ground and try to hold down arms and legs.
I guess.
That's how Boston would have liked to see it go down.
I guess.
Don't you think that a lot of people would have been like, why did you have 5 cops tackling this guy?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, come on.
But it's kind of a lose-lose situation either way. It's you taser him or you have 5 guys jump him at the same time. But really, there weren't even 5 guys right there.
At that very time,
yeah.
And so you have a situation. Let's say you did have the 5 guys and you jump on him and take him down. What are the chances that one of those 5 guys or Mr. Williams is going to get hurt in the process?
Yeah, exactly.
You're going to have a high probability of that. And you look at it right now, Mr. Williams and all the cops, they're not hurt.
No.
They're fine. And that's the whole point. So I just find it funny, though, that Mr. Boston is saying they could have easily taken him down. It's like, what do you mean taking him down? How do you take somebody down?
Well, yeah, and you got to factor in Williams' size. He's like 6'3", 230. He's a football player at the U of I. He's huge. And, I mean, Pullman officers, really not that big. So it really would have taken 4 or 5 guys to probably subdue him had he decided to fight. And given his past unwillingness to cooperate with Officer Bell's demands and actually other officers' demands, I mean, it's kind of showing a pattern that he's not really listening to them and not willing to do what they want him to do. And the officers just want to go home at the end of the night, just like everybody else. So, I mean, why would they want to go hands-on with somebody when they have an effective tool like a taser?
Sure. Okay, so it was the second time a taser had been used that night. An hour earlier, Bell used the device after being pushed by Henry Hubbard, which you said his name was, 20-year-old of Waitsburg, Washington. Hubbard was arrested for third-degree assault, which is a felony. So what's interesting about it is, what's really interesting about the whole Henry Hubbard thing is I was doing a search on the WSU phone book online to see if he was around, because I was hoping to talk to him and get a little bit more information about his story, because we've heard so much about the other one. I would like to get a little bit more insight onto this one. And I can't find his name in the phone book anywhere, and I think he's not a student. He's not a student.
Him and his brother, who's the one that was initially arrested, and then Henry comes in. And
so neither of them are students?
No.
Why were they in the air? They could be here all they want. I'm just sort of curious what brought them to Pullman this weekend.
I would assume that they just wanted to come up and visit friends and party or something. Okay. But I believe that they're from the Walla Walla area.
Okay. So we have a couple non-students. So this isn't even and the point that I'm wanting to make here is this is not even a student versus non-student issue. It's not like the cops are running around saying, oh, it's a student, let's shoot him.
Yeah.
You know, of course, you can say, well, they look like a student, therefore the cop's going to do it or whatever. But the point is, and you started talking about it a little bit, is the fact that the officers do want to go home at the end of the night.
They do.
They're going to, and they don't want to stop by the hospital and fix a broken bone or a hurt hand or be out of work for a week or two because they had to take some guy down. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to read Martin Boston's editorial or his opinion, which actually you could almost argue the front page article from the Evergreen was also his opinion, because many of those things in that article are almost out of this opinion that he writes, because it's the same kind of statements that are being made. And I'm going to go ahead and read this, and then I want you to actually, because you were an actual eyewitness, you were there from the very start of this situation.
I was there for both of them.
You were there for both of them, okay. But you witnessed the second situation. You witnessed what happened. Did you see what was going on inside of the bar before all this took place?
No, we were actually standing outside of the bar.
So you didn't see what happened inside, but
no.
You did see everything from the point it came outside. You saw everything, and you were able to witness it.
No, I actually didn't see the tasing.
You didn't?
I didn't, but I had talked to all the officers, like, right afterwards,
okay.
And I have all of their stories.
Okay. Now, here's the question for you, then. If I were somebody who doesn't believe the officers, what kind of information can you give me that will corroborate their story?
Probably not much. Probably not going to change your mind anyway if you don't believe them.
Okay.
So
fair enough. So where were you? I'll get to your part of everything here in a tiny bit. Okay, so early on Sunday morning at Mike's Bar, two black men were punched, one unjustly by multiple Mike's bouncers. While I was talking to Pullman Police Officer Carl Bell outside the bar, another black male University of Idaho student, Jaron Williams, came to talk to Bell about his account of the incident. While talking to Bell, Williams touched his shoulder. This was not a threatening act, nor were his tone of voice, content of the words, or body language. It was obvious to me that this was how Williams communicates while conversing in a civil environment. The officer immediately told Williams to remove his hand because touching a police officer can be interpreted as assault. Williams looked flabbergasted as his friends tried to get him to walk away, but Williams assured his friends that he only wanted to talk to the officer and he knew his rights. Williams continued the conversation but had touched Bell again while talking. After this, Bell called for Williams to be arrested. I then saw Officer Dan Hargraves shoot Williams in the back with a taser to take him to the ground and arrest him. What is amazing to me is the hypocrisy of the incident. Only one man was arrested that night, and it was not one of the Mike's bouncers who punched people inside the club. This apparently did not merit an investigation. Instead, it was a man who touched an officer while trying to convey the injustice of the alleged incident. A few questions immediately come to mind. Do you, Officer Bell, feel you are better or more important than the average citizen that no one can even touch you? Were the officers using excessive force? Has justice been served? Pullman police have a history of stories similar to this one. A couple weeks ago, a black man was beaten by multiple unidentified white males outside of Mike's Bar, and no action was taken. In the spring of 2006, a black man was jumped outside of Mike's Bar, stripped of his clothing, and thrown into a laundry room near Providence Court, giving him frostbite on his toes. I can almost guarantee this is the first you have heard of this. There was not an extensive investigation, and no media covered this event. What about the incident involving a black male football player in the spring of 2001? He was horrifically beaten outside of a fraternity, and this ended with no one in jail, and no one was punished for the crime. But I bet you didn't miss the front page sketch of an unidentified black male who was allegedly responsible for multiple rapes in the area a few years back. However, the truth came out, the whole thing was made up. Also, you didn't miss stories of black male students, athletes, being accused of rape or put on the front page for bad grades, did you? Protect and serve, yeah, right. Serve and defeat is more like it. In 1992, Los Angeles police officers were acquitted of beating Rodney King to a pulp. Does this sound familiar? Recently, Pullman police officers were acquitted of police negligence and excessive force in a Spokane court for the attic incident in the fall of 2002. It is a fact that the officers came in without warning and sprayed a party of more than 200 people with a chemical, sending dozens to the hospital and leaving many with other physical problems. It is ironic that the officer accused of spraying the reactive chemical in the crowd during the attic incident is the same Officer Hargraves who tased the unarmed Williams in the back Saturday outside of Mike's. I think not. By letting police officers prey on innocent civilians without punishment or justice, we are under their mercy and the will of individuals whose belief and ideologies may perpetrate malice and hate. Bell tried to justify Sunday's incident to me by saying Williams touched him, and this could be interpreted by the law as assaulting a police officer. In Virginia, it's against the law to wear saggy pants. not long ago, it was against the law for a person of color to use whites-only facility. Because this is a law, does it mean it is just? What is clear is that a man who was tased and arrested Sunday was a victim of excessive police force and did not merit this type of policing. It is clear law enforcement officers, including the Pullman police, continue to work in a seemingly corrupt manner, serving the interest of providing their dominance over civilians, rather than protection in the service of them. The plight of black males in Pullman continues to be swept under the rug. Of course, black males don't trust the Pullman police. Many encounters and with officers attacking them as a guilty party, whether the black men are the aggressors or the victims. When the black men are the victims, often nothing is done. It is also apparent that police might not be held accountable for their actions. Our judicial system caters to law enforcement personnel, allowing others to be preyed upon by these unpunishable predators. When I see Pullman police officers, they remind me of a lynch mob that continue to perpetuate racial stereotypes by ignoring the plight of black males in Pullman. I'm not calling the actions of the Pullman police racist because I cannot prove it, but it would be interesting to hear any proof that shows their actions were not. So, man, there's so many things to touch on in here. I mean, I guess I could go back to the top and we'll just sort of work our way down. But before we do that, you've more or less heard between the newspaper articles and what Mr. Boston wrote here, the fact that all Williams did was touch Bell's shoulder twice, that he was not acting in a threatening manner in any way, shape, or form. His tone of voice was not threatening. The content of his words were not threatening. His body language was not threatening. And for all intents and purposes, Mr. Williams was very civil in his conversation with Mr. Bell, but Mr. Bell, obviously due to racism, is, I think, what the idea of this article is.
That's what I would say.
Decided that this guy needed to be arrested for no reason, mm-hmm. and that then that gave Officer Hargraves, which once again is really interesting because it wasn't Officer Hargraves, but no. It gave, in this article, gave Officer Hargraves the opportunity to shoot an unarmed black man in the back. So, and this goes back to my earlier statement about the newspapers. We have two different newspaper articles that are actually saying different things depending on which article you're reading. And now you also have this that was printed in a newspaper that is clearly an editorial opinion piece that has non-factual data. It has outright lies and mistruths and half-truths about this kind of stuff. And this is some of the argument that I was making on the Facebook conversations where they the people are putting up very one-sided newspaper articles, or they're glossing over the fact that people actually did things to warrant the use of the taser. And in some cases, the articles that are being put up are almost opinion pieces because of by the way they're written, it's pretty much an opinion piece that they're looking at. And if somebody were to put this up on the Amnesty International website and then people all over the place start using it as proof that this was an excessive force used, that it was just a really nice black guy that did nothing wrong at all whatsoever, and the mean white cops decided that they were going to tase him. So what I'm getting at is that using newspapers as evidence of excessive force, I don't think is a fair use of the newspaper, because you are definitely getting very one-sided stories. So anyway, we've now heard, like I said, from the newspaper articles, and once again, who gave quotes to the newspaper? A lot of the quotes given were from Boston Martin, or Martin Boston, and we know he's very opinionated about the situation. So do you think that his statements are not going to be colored by his opinion when he gives them to the newspaper?
They definitely are. It's pretty apparent.
Yes. So go ahead and now tell us the tell us the order of the events. Tell us what happened and why this incident actually took place.
Okay. Well, I was actually on a ride-along with Officer Bell that night, and that explains why I was at both scenes. And for the one at Mike's, one of the bouncers had actually told us, or they had told another officer, that they suspected that it might get kind of crazy at closing time. So there were, I believe, three or four officers on scene. We were just standing around, just talking, making sure nothing got out of hand. And then we decided to walk outside to where the exit is by the pool room at Mike's, on the west side of Mike's. And we were standing there for a couple minutes, and then somebody motioned for us to come inside. We didn't know why. We assumed that it was a fight or something. So we get in there, and we see a big crowd of people, like, trying to separate these two guys, like, trying to get them towards the exit. We really didn't know what was going on at that time, but that's all we saw. So we help get them out, and then we separate them and try and get their stories. And Officer Bell, as it stated in the articles, he took Martin Boston because he took him about probably 30 feet away and started talking to him. The entire time, Martin Boston was yelling at the top of his lungs racially motivated things at the bouncer.
So Officer Bell and Mr. Boston were outside of the bar.
Yeah.
And they're conversing with one another about what took place.
Not really conversing.
Okay, but they're supposed to be talking and trying to figure out what's going on, get everything figured out. But while this is going on, there's a bouncer, and Mr. Boston is screaming and yelling at the bouncer versus talking to Officer Bell.
Correct.
Okay.
And I was actually standing over by the bouncer, and I was talking to him, and I asked him what was going on, and he said that that Mr. Boston and his group of friends that were inside the club had been acting pretty wild all night, been trying to start fights with the bouncers and stuff. This is just what he told me. And then, so at one point, they went up to him and they told him that he needed to leave. Not exactly sure if it was just because he was starting to fight with them, or if he was knocking over drinks, or actually starting fights inside the club or whatnot. And so he told me that Martin Boston told him that he would only leave if, I believe it was, if his friends left, or if he carried him out. So the bouncer picked him up, like, gave him a big bear hug, picked him up, and started carrying him out. And he said Martin Boston started choking him in response. And so to get him to stop choking him, he said he punched him. So then I think that's when all the pandemonium broke out and people started separating them and pulling them out. And so that's, from what I was told, what happened before. Before, like, in the club.
Okay.
And then, like I said, once we got outside, Boston and the bouncer were separated. And Boston was just yelling at the bouncer the entire time rather than actually talking to Bell and telling him what had happened. And so, at this point, I had actually walked back inside Mike's, just right inside the door there, and was trying to talk to somebody else. And then apparently this is when Mr. Williams was escorted outside by two officers. And
why was he escorted out by the officers?
From what they told me, DJ Goldfinger had come out, and he was looking for officers to help him with something. And so he wanted them to escort him out. They didn't know why. They just knew that Goldfinger worked there, and he wanted him out. And last I checked, it's the right of a business to refuse service to anyone. So they tried escorting him out, and apparently he did the same thing that he did to Bell later on, in that they asked him to leave a couple times. They kind of guided him along with their hands, and he slapped their arms away. So from what they told me, he did it to both of them while he was still in the club.
He did it to both officers, slapping their arms away.
Correct.
Okay.
And then eventually they got him outside. And from what Officer Bell told me, is the way he perceived it is that Mr. Williams saw Martin Boston yelling over Bell's shoulder, because Bell was in between the bouncer and Martin Boston. And so, because Boston was yelling over his shoulder, it kind of looked like Boston was yelling at Bell. And so what he perceived it as is that Williams came up and was getting in the way because he thought they were fighting or arguing about something. And so then Williams comes up, gets in his face. Bell asks him to scoot back because he's trying to talk to Boston, because Boston was alleging that the bouncer had hit him. Bouncer had admitted to me that he did it, but he said it was more in self-defense. Whereas Boston just claims he just punches him for no reason. So there's the conflicting stories there. So Bell is really trying to like talk to Boston as a witness or as a victim. And so he was trying to get his side of the story since he was alleging an assault. And Williams comes up, gets in the middle of it and obstructs the investigation, really. And so Bell was just trying to get him to move back. Williams slapped his arm away, tells him that it could be assault, and he asks him to move back again, and he slaps his arm away even harder a second time. So Bell then told him that he was under arrest. He went to grab one of his arms and hands. Another officer went to grab his other arm and hand, and at this time, one of Williams' friends was, or actually the whole time, I guess, he was telling him that he needed to go and that he shouldn't be there, and he should just mind his own business, let him take care of it. And so at this point, Williams started walking away after he was told he was under arrest, which means he's not free to go, and that the officers have the right to use a necessary amount of force to effect an arrest for obstructing. And so they tried grabbing his arms. He's just kind of shrugged it off, walked away, and that's when another officer tased him.
That's not what I understand happened, though. The newspaper article said it was way different.
That's what they said.
Yeah. So why do you think the newspaper article would be so far off what some of the events were?
Guess it's because Martin Boston works for the newspaper, and they probably talked to him as their main witness.
Okay.
And Jaron Williams as their main witness, and then they talked to Commander Tennant, who wasn't even working at the time.
Okay.
And really, he said, I believe in the paper, he hadn't even read the reports yet, so...
Sure.
I mean, he's just kind of going off of hearsay as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's really frustrating that the... that some of the... things that are said are going off of, you know, just a couple people's point of view, and that information could get so twisted. And just by human nature, and I think pretty much everybody does this, when you're trying to tell somebody a story where you probably did something a little bit wrong and probably got punished for it,
mm-hmm.
you still tell the story in such a way that you were almost pretty much purely innocent and mm-hmm. they were out to get you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how often do people tell stories like that where, man, I wasn't really doing nothing at all. I was just walking down the street minding my own business
mm-hmm.
and that guy came up and hit me for no reason. And it's like, well, you did leave out the part where you told him to, you know, go F off, and that you called his girlfriend ugly, and, you know, you spit on his car. You left that part out. But for the most part, you're minding your own business. You're right.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where people love to leave out the little facts of what they did wrong that would lead to something else happening.
Mm-hmm.
That's not to say that somebody coming up and hitting you because you called their girlfriend ugly is the right thing to do, but you weren't also minding your own business and doing nothing wrong at all.
Like you said, you were, yeah.
So... in this situation, we have this long editorial, and I'm talking to Brandon Coe. This is the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, and we're talking about the incidents of taser use up on WSU's campus. So actually, I guess it was technically off campus, but close enough. And we are trying to figure out, I guess, at the end of the day, what I would like to have a determination of is, should we be using tasers on people in general that are resistive? Or should we only use it in situations where maybe deadly force is necessary? And this would be an alternative to using deadly force.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that was said here in the editorial was the fact that Williams had only touched Carl Bell's shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Twice,
mm-hmm.
and that's why he got arrested. Is that true?
Not according to Officer Bell.
Okay. Now, and also he was using non-threatening words, non-threatening acts. He was trying to have a nice civil conversation. The tone of his voice was would have been considered civil. The content of his words and body language would have been considered civil. Is that true?
I can't testify to that because, like I said before, I wasn't...
You're not under oath.
Technically
you're
there.
I'm not a lawyer. Come on.
I mean, given the situation, I would highly doubt that. Given Martin Boston's current state, or the last state that I had saw him in, yelling repeatedly, okay. multiple things, very pretty nasty things at the bouncer, I would highly doubt that he would have a correct memory of it.
Okay.
Plus, from what I've been told, he wasn't exactly sober. I know Mr. Williams wasn't sober.
Okay.
And, I mean, officers don't really have a reason to lie. If they do lie, if they do mess up, like, they leave themselves open for pretty severe penalties, like civil and criminal lawsuits. And,
sure.
Like, is it really worth losing your house over just to get one little conviction?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I wouldn't think so either. Also, it would seem to me that if you're a police officer, the one thing that you have going for you is your word, your honesty. And if you were to ever get up on the stand and under oath lie and you get found out, I would think that your career would pretty much be shot because your credibility is 100% gone, and that's all you
exactly.
have.
Exactly.
If you have no credibility, then there's no way you're going to get a conviction on anything ever, because every defense attorney is going to go up and say, well, didn't you lie about this situation? Could you be lying about this one?
Exactly.
You know, and just put enough, because all the defense attorney needs to do is put reasonable doubt in mm-hmm. the mind of the jury. They don't sure. prove innocence of their what's the word, of their client.
Right.
They don't prove innocence. They put reasonable doubt. And that's all they have to do. It's not nearly as hard as proving innocence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole point of our justice system. We'd rather let a guilty man go free than put an innocent man in jail.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not to say that innocent people don't go to jail, but that's the goal that we strive for.
Exactly.
And as such, that's why we're saying beyond a reasonable doubt for convictions, but you know, if you have any reasonable doubt at all, don't convict him.
Yeah.
The prosecutor did not do enough to prove his case. And part of that is what the officer says. And if the officer cannot be believed, they're going to have a hard time getting any kind of convictions mm-hmm. from that police officer from that point on. And that would be bad.
Yeah.
So the idea that they would want to lie about something, especially something that really started out as tame, I guess you could say, as this one started out. Granted, it's a little fight and everything like that, but we're not talking about some guy with a assault rifle inside shooting up a bar. I mean, that would mm-hmm. this is as far as policing goes, this is sort of a normal thing. There was an assault.
Yeah.
Something took place. You went up to investigate it. And how often do assaults happen up on campus? Realistically, I bet every weekend there's people being assaulted. And this
Multiple.
Is something, and we'll get to that in a second, I guess. So, okay. So as we know, Officer Hargraves shot Mr. Williams in the back with a taser. True or false?
False.
False. Okay.
Immediately after the tasering, because I actually came back outside right after the tasering, and there was a huge crowd of people. I'd say probably at least 60 people standing around. Quite a few of them were yelling that was unnecessary, that they shouldn't have done that, that it was racially motivated, and many people were calling out for the officer's badge number, which they have every right to do. And they were told correctly that it is 464. Officer Hargraves' number is 406.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. So, only one man was arrested that night, and it was not the Mike's bouncer who punched the people inside the club. I guess what he's saying here is only one man in that incident was
yeah.
arrested that night, because we know more than one man was arrested that night.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
We had actually arrested about 8 or 9 at the B Street incident.
Oh, wow. Okay, so this meaning the punching at the hands of the bouncer, apparently did not merit investigation. Is that true or false? There's no investigation done over the assault that took place between the bouncer and Boston?
Well, that's what Officer Bell was trying to do when Mr. Williams interrupted him. And then due to the ensuing chaos after the tasering, he couldn't finish it there. He actually tried investigating it further later on that night. He had the bouncer come in and talk to him down at the station. He went and talked to Martin Boston over at his car probably about 15, 20 minutes after the tasering had happened. He tried talking to him more about it, but actually now the investigation was handed off to the Whitman County Sheriff's Office, so now they're dealing with it.
Okay. So essentially, though, this claim that this did not apparently merit an investigation is an outright falsehood.
Yeah.
Because it is being investigated.
Yeah, it was immediately after, like, while he was making those claims, but he just neglects the fact that Officer Bell is actually trying to get his side of the story.
Huh. Okay. That was I think we had a little issue here a second ago. So, just real quickly to go back on that, the investigation into the incident between the bouncer and Mr. Boston was being investigated immediately.
It was.
Continued to be investigated that night and is now being handed off to the Whitman County Sheriff's Office.
Mm-hmm.
For what reason there?
Just so that it doesn't look like there's a conflict of interest.
Okay, because of the secondary incident that came out of it. So it is being investigated and was being investigated from the very first moment. So the fact that this apparently didn't merit investigation is an outright lie because he knew better?
Pretty much.
Would you call it a falsehood because he was incorrect and thought he was right? Or would you call it a lie because he knew it was being investigated and he's saying it's not?
It's tough to say, but really I would say given his current state, he probably wouldn't understand that they were trying to investigate it.
Okay, so what you're thinking is that he didn't realize it was being investigated?
Probably.
Okay, so he's not necessarily lying, he's just incorrect.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. So, let's see here. What's another thing he said? Okay, a few questions come to mind. Officer Bell, do you feel you are more important than the average citizen that no one can even touch you? Can you? You're a Crim J major.
Mm-hmm.
What can you tell me about the idea that about police officers and assault and touching them, and why would an officer not want everybody just coming up and like putting their hands all over them?
Well, technically, under Washington state law, any unwanted touching is fourth degree assault, which is a gross misdemeanor.
Okay.
So if I were to come up and even just poke you and you didn't want me to, technically you could charge me with assault.
Okay.
So what is the... Probably not.
I'm going to put you on the spot. What's the RCW for assault fourth?
I don't remember.
Oh, come on, Mr. Crim J Major.
We don't have to memorize those.
Crim J doesn't make you memorize that stuff?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
It's 9A36041, I think. I'm pretty sure.
Sure. Sounds okay. About right.
Anyway.
I know it's 9A something.
Oh, of course. At 9836041, and then 031 would be assault third, which is assault of the police officer.
Mm-hmm. Now, among other things.
Right. Police officers, firefighters, bus drivers, that kind of stuff.
Doctors. Just had one of those the other one.
No. Oh, really? Good. Okay, so why is it that people have an issue over, and when I say people, why is it that there's an issue of touching a police officer?
I really couldn't tell you because, I mean, police officers, it's their job to show up at a scene and to control a scene that's out of control.
Okay.
Or that something has previously caused it to be out of control. And so, really, they're just trying to settle everything down, calm everything down. And when you come up to them and you start pushing them, you start slapping them away, telling them that they shouldn't be there or something like that, I mean, you're interfering with their ability to do their job.
Okay. But what about a touch? I mean, you come up and people do have the personality that when they talk to you, they like to have the one hand on the shoulder and mm-hmm. have that personal space issue. Why is it that a cop wouldn't want somebody that close to him?
They have a gun. I mean, if they're focusing their attention on you, somebody can come up behind them, start trying to wrestle their gun away from them or
okay.
one of their other weapons like a baton or pepper spray or something. I mean, you got to give officers their space because they have to protect themselves. They have to protect their equipment.
So it's officer safety.
It is.
And that's okay. So that's I think that's an easy way of saying it. It's
yeah.
officer safety.
Yeah.
You want to have that buffer in there because you don't know, unfortunately, as an officer, is everybody the friendly guy or is this guy trying
exactly.
to pretend to be friendly to get close to me and then he's going to hurt me.
Exactly.
And it's all about what you said at the very beginning of the show. They want to go home just like everybody else from their job. So this is the PES on KZU 90.7 FM. We are talking to Brandon Coe. We're talking about the recent tasering incidences. I'm going to go to the favorite of the PES for a couple minutes. We're going to hear one song, take a little bit of a break, and we'll come back with some more of our interview with Brandon in a minute. We'll be right back. high school equivalency program at WSU welcomes volunteers to participate as tutors for adult GED students. Fluent Spanish speakers are especially needed. This is a wonderful opportunity to acquire teaching experience. Contact Priscilla Haystay at 335-5652 or go to Cleveland Hall, room 21 to 23. For more information, if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, feel free to contact KZUU at 335-2207 or email us gm@kzuu.org. You're listening to the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym. You're with Scotty here. We're talking with Brandon about the attic, or excuse me, we're actually talking about the use of tasers in policing, and specifically policing in Pullman, and specifically, more yet, the taser situation that happened 2 weeks ago on Saturday night. Stand by for more. Welcome back to the PES on KZU 90.7 FM. Reach us on the phone, 335-2207, on the web, www.kzuu.org, and on our website, www.thepes.com. Once again in the studio with me, we got Brandon Coe. He's a Crim J major here at WSU. He witnessed the taser incident, and have him on the show to talk about, as a Crim J major, we're talking about the concepts of using tasers and using force and necessary force. And I definitely want to start getting into the idea of necessary and force and when to use force, when not to use force. What's the whole point of doing forceful acts?
Mm-hmm.
But we're still working on Mr. Boston's opinion piece that was in the Evergreen. There's a lot of non-truthful or non-correct statements that were made. I guess that might be the best way to say it, because I definitely don't want to accuse anybody of outright lying unless I know for sure they are outright lying.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be best to say these are just untruthful.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's not necessarily saying he's lying. That's just what he believes.
Yeah.
And what he believes could be wrong. Therefore, it's non-truthful.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be the nicest way of doing it, to say that's not truthful or that is truthful as far as, you know, the facts go. And the thing is that he might believe some of this is the situation. He might believe that Mr. Williams walked up and was being very civil, but he might not remember everything, right? Or maybe he is coloring the facts a little bit there because he doesn't want it to make... He obviously here is trying to make it seem like Mr. Williams got what he had coming.
Yeah.
Or he's trying to make it seem like he didn't have what happened. So
yeah.
What's interesting is we have this statement in here that Pullman police have a history of similar stories to this one, speaking of the whole taser situation. And then he talked about how a couple weeks ago, a black man was beaten by multiple unidentified males outside of Mike's bar. No action was taken.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I unfortunately don't... There's not enough information there for me to look it up. And one thing that people will know is, at least with me, if you tell me something and you cite a source, I'll check your source, because a lot of times I've actually found where the source is nothing close to what they're actually citing.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times people will cite sources in hopes that, well, since he cited a source, he must be telling the truth. Therefore, I'm going to believe it without looking into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I see it, this last election season, I saw it all the time with people citing that, well, this person voted against this situation, and here's my source, and I went to the source, and it showed just the exact opposite that they voted, you know, and it was just like, okay. So I will go in, and I will check into this stuff myself, so I get the whole story, because as I saw with the newspaper articles, I'm not getting the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
As I saw with the things being said on Facebook, where they were trying to say, well, look at all these cases of abuse by cops on people who didn't deserve to be tased, and you start reading the actual story they're using. And it's like, well, geez, I see why on scene the guy got tased.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the argument is, well, the guy got paid $25,000 afterwards, so therefore, obviously, excessive force was used. Well, I'm looking at it from the point of view is on scene, why did the person get tased?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not looking at the armchair quarterback 3 weeks later point of view, which is 100% different, because it's really easy to armchair quarterback something weeks and months later on. It's a lot harder to be on scene and have something happen and make a split decision. A lot harder.
It is.
If you're able to call a timeout, go back, huddle up with your friends, you know, talk to the coach, talk to the chief, you know, call the prosecutor, get a hold of a defense attorney, discuss it for about 20 minutes and then go back and do things, maybe everything would be perfect, but you don't have that opportunity. So why on scene did some of these incidences happen? And was it excessive force at the time? Or is it a lawyer after the fact looking to gold dig? How often do you see people, and having a lawsuit and winning a lawsuit doesn't mean anything as far as money goes, that somebody did something wrong. Look at the McDonald's case. How often do people go, she got paid $2 million for hot coffee spilling on her lap? The coffee's hot. That's the whole idea of coffee. Come on. That's idiotic. But she won money for that. So if somebody gets paid $25,000 and an out-of-court settlement, does that mean that anything was done wrong, or is that the cheapest way to get out of it and get the problem solved? Because you pay $25,000 and you don't have to go to court and pay maybe two or three times that and all the legal fees and the time that it's going to take a lawyer. So it's like, okay, we don't want to deal with it. Let's just get it out of our hair, pay $25,000, make them happy. People see this as a gold mine. So the fact that somebody paid out $25,000 for an incident like this means in no way, shape, or form that there was actually excessive force. It's just a matter that the city doesn't want to fight it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm not saying that that 100% means there was never excessive force. There are situations, I am sure, that you can come up with where it is true excessive force was used.
Oh, it's definitely.
But in the situation, in the articles that are being cherry-picked and posted on Facebook about this is excessive force, well, this pregnant person once got tased. Yeah, so what's your point? Just because they're pregnant doesn't mean that they can't still hurt and maim and kill people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a 78-year-old grandma or 74-year-old grandma. Who cares if she's a grandma? I don't care if she's a grandma. The point is she's out there kicking and biting people. She's a threat. Stop with it. Okay, anyway. I digress. So we have a situation here where we're being told a couple weeks ago, so we have no real time frame other than a couple weeks, a black man was beaten by multiple unidentified white males outside of Mike's bar. No action was taken. And where I was going with that whole tangent that I like to do is, if there was more information where I could go investigate this for myself, I would have for this show.
Mm.
And just for my knowledge, I believe, and just this is my belief because of knowing the police department we have, and I've said this on a show actually before this taser incident even happened. The Monday before that, I was on the show, and I have it on tape.
Mm.
I was talking about how lucky we are to have our police force that we have. We have a lot of great cops here in Pullman, NWSU, and Whitman County.
Mm-hmm.
Even the state troopers, there's a lot of good troopers. We have a lot of good cops in this area. We're very lucky for that. And I don't believe that we have a single – I honestly do not believe, and I will put my hand on a stack of Bibles and I will swear to God about this. I do not believe we have a single police officer on the Pullman police force – that would purposely ignore a crime because it happened to a black man.
I'd agree.
I have no doubt in my mind, not a single cop on our force would ever ignore something because it happened to a black man. So, and that is what is being argued here, is that because the guy was black and it was white people that did it, it was being ignored. And then it goes on to another one. Another black man was jumped, stripped of his clothes, thrown in the laundry room near Providence Court, giving him frostbite on his toes. Now, in this one, notice he didn't say anything about it not being investigated. All he's saying here is that a black man was jumped, stripped of his clothes, and thrown in the laundry room at Providence Court. He could almost guarantee we'd never heard of it. So,
does that mean it wasn't reported or wasn't investigated? Which is it? Because if it's not reported, we can't investigate it. Like, I mean,
well, and here he says, and I know for a fact it was reported because I heard it on the radios and stuff like that.
Okay.
But he said there was not an extensive investigation. Okay, so what is an extensive investigation? Is that where you have 20 officers working on it for 3 years? Or is that where you investigate and run down as many leads as you have? And that's the problem, is how, if you have no suspect information at all, you have no ability to even say, this is what the guy looked like.
Mm-hmm.
If you have no ability to say anything about any of them, your investigation is going to stall out quite quickly. And this is, it's like this with anybody. It has nothing to do with whether it's the Pullman cops or any other cop, or if it's even super cop. If he has zero to go with, it's going to be really hard to do anything above going with whatever you can find. Whether, and your best hope is that some citizen saw something and is able to help with a description or something like
that. You're going to need some eyewitness testimony. You're going to need some suspect information. Like if the victim knows one of the suspects, you're going to need, like, obviously, he was probably transported in a car. If they can get a car description, a license plate.
A car description would be a great start.
Yeah, I mean, but if they don't have any of that, there's not much you can do.
Yeah, so...
I mean, it's not like Pullman has their own CSI department where, like, you go put in the DNA and you get it 2 seconds later, like on TV. It doesn't work that way.
No? Are you sure?
Yeah.
And actually, remind me of that later on, because I did want to talk about TV and the perception that TV causes on police scene. So he also says that there was no media coverage of the event. And what's interesting about that is then the rest of the sentences more or less go into media coverage mm-hmm. of situations dealing with black people.
Mm-hmm.
And what's he starts out this as Pullman police have a history of stories similar to this one. And then from there he goes in talking about media and how the media portrays black people. And it's interesting that he throws that in the same paragraph as he's talking about Pullman police in their history of, in his view, mistreating black people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like he's trying to use the fact there's no media coverage on this person being put in the Providence Court laundry room as proof that Pullman police are out to get the black guys.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but do police dictate what goes in the paper?
Exactly. You know how often I hear things or see things happen that don't get in the newspaper?
Oh, yeah.
It's not even funny. If every assault that took place on campus or around campus was given like a front page story like this tasing incident was, that's all the newspaper would be.
Mm-hmm.
Every Monday, all you'd have is the front page full of articles about this assault and that assault.
Not even just the front page.
Oh, yeah.
Probably the first five.
And here's the other thing about this, the black man who was beaten by unidentified white males. I have heard so many times, time and time again, and I've seen a lot of white guys who've been jumped by a group of white guys. And this white guy's bloody nose, a black eye, he's sitting there on the sidewalk, doesn't know who in the heck did it. Cops have nothing else to go on. They're like, well, do you have any description? Well, all I know is there's like five of them. They're all white guys, bunch of punks, and they went running that way.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we'll do what we can, but you're not giving us anything to go on.
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with whether you're white or black. The only person that's making an issue about a race in this situation is Mr. Boston.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one who seems to think that there's all these racial issues. He's the one who's claiming that people see a black man and therefore they think they see a criminal. He's the one claiming that, not us.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one who's making everything out to be a racial issue, not us. Who's actually the one who's has issues with race? Is it us who's not making an issue out of it? All I'm saying, and all I've been saying the whole time, is if there's an assault taking place anywhere in Pullman, it doesn't matter who got assaulted, the cops are going to be there. Our police officers are going to be there. They're going to investigate. They want to get the guy who did it.
They do.
They want to. So it really has nothing to do with race, but some people like to make it into a racial issue. They like to make it seem that they're victimized over things, and they like to seem that they are being held down, and that they have to have certain privileges given to them above and beyond in order to right these wrongs.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to get these and argue that, yes, they still are needed and that we need them, you still have to continue to show that there is wrongs going on in order to be able to keep the argument that you still need these special privileges.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, protect and serve, yeah, right. Serve and defeat is more like it. In 1992, Los Angeles police officers were acquitted of beating Rodney King to a pulp. Does this sound familiar? Recently, Pullman police officers were acquitted of police negligence and excessive force in the Spokane court for the attic incident in the fall of 2002. So, just the first thing he does here is he tries to show that he uses the idea that how many people today in some of their civics classes or law classes or any kind of classes haven't seen the videotape portion. Mm-hmm. Of the incident that took place with Rodney King. And notice I did say the videotape portion. And how many seconds of that videotape have they seen? The 23 seconds they normally show, or the, you know, the couple minutes that it really is?
Yeah.
You know, how much of the incident do they talk about that led up to it? But he tries to tie this incident that most people have in their mind as clear excessive force by police. That's the way
and
it's presented to everybody.
Racially motivated,
excessive force by police officers. He's trying to tie that to what happened in Pullman.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what he's doing by putting these two together. And he's even saying, does this sound familiar? The officers down there were acquitted. Well, they were acquitted criminally of doing criminal wrongdoing.
Yeah.
But they actually were sued civilly, and the people who did the case civilly found in favor of Mr. King, and he actually received a settlement, if I'm not mistaken about that.
I believe so.
In the situation here, our officers, A, didn't do anything wrong to start with, and B, were acquitted of everything civilly because they didn't do anything wrong to start with. And the fact that it is being brought up is another situation, as the as Mr. Estes said in his editorial, it's bitter grapes.
Yeah,
it's a situation where the attic incident. Well, we're going to talk about the attic incident right here.
Well, actually, before you go on, one thing I do want to say is there are different standards of proof required for criminal and civil matters. So, like with the Rodney King thing, while they were acquitted in the local trial of all charges for criminally, they were also tried federally for violating Rodney King's civil rights. And I believe two of the officers were completely exonerated, and then two were convicted of, I think it was violating his civil rights. And so they received some sort of punishment for that as well. But then civilly, the standards of proof are much lower.
Sure.
Like, it's only a preponderance of the evidence. So basically, if 51% of the evidence is in your favor, you win.
Hey.
Whereas criminally,
our state major is coming through for me.
Whereas criminally, it's you need, like, beyond a reasonable doubt, which is what they say, approximately like 92-93%. So I mean, not exactly 100, but pretty darn close.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's just to show, like, that it doesn't necessarily mean that they were in the wrong by the criminal or civilly. Like, even though they're convicted, even though they had to pay the civil fine, but like criminally, they were exonerated because there wasn't enough proof to show it.
Sure.
So,
and you know, we could probably spend a half hour talking about the whole Rodney King situation, but today we're talking about a more local issue, and it's tasers and Pullman police officers. And so they say it is a fact the officers came without warning and sprayed a party of more than 200 people with a chemical, sending dozens to the hospital and leaving many with physical problems. Okay, you weren't around during the attic incident, were you?
No.
No, okay.
2002, right?
Yeah.
No, I wasn't here.
You weren't here. Okay. Well, I can speak to the fact that they did not go in to a party of 200 people and spray them.
Yeah, I've heard this story.
It was a situation where, unfortunately, and this is something where we can talk about the use of pepper spray versus the use of taser in a situation where you need to subdue somebody.
Mm-hmm.
In this situation, tasers weren't even available. They had pepper spray. They used pepper spray because there's a fight. They get called, and this is the frustrating thing about it, and this is why they were acquitted.
Mm-hmm.
This is why that there was no criminal charges, there's no civil rights violations, there was no money paid out by anything. Because this is what really happened.
Mm-hmm.
Not because everybody's like looking for a quick buck and some lawyer over in Tacoma thinks he has a gold mine on his hands. What really happened was there's guys fighting downstairs. There's two part. There was an upper floor, which was a club,
the
a
attic.
Nightclub, and then you had the lower floor, which was actually the Top of China restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
There was a group of people downstairs involved in a fight.
Mm-hmm.
People call it in.
Mm-hmm.
Police officers at the Pullman Police Station, which is really near,
yeah,
they get in a police car and they pull up to the scene. They go inside. There's a fight in progress. The fight doesn't break up. They use pepper spray. It breaks up the fight. Unfortunately, pepper spray then goes throughout the building, gets in the ventilation system. Upstairs, there's a big party going on.
Mm-hmm.
The ventilation system helped get that stuff pushed around the building,
mm-hmm.
causing people to have some of the effects of the pepper spray.
Yeah, they were secondarily exposed.
Secondary exposure. Now, that is not the same is a bunch of cops without warning running in and spraying 200 people, as is trying to be, and that's exactly what he's saying here. They did not run in and just randomly spray 200 people.
No, it's a pure appeal to emotion. It's almost like they just lined 200 people up and like, hey, we're gonna pepper spray you, and not tell
no,
you.
No, they didn't give you warning though. They just lined up and sprayed you.
Just line up and close your eyes, and then we'll just pepper spray you.
No, open your eyes because it hurts more.
Well, yeah, either way, it'll get in your eyes, but. I mean, that's what he makes it sound like, and it's ridiculous.
It is, exactly. So he's trying to use the attic as an example of excessive force by the police, which they were acquitted of before he even wrote this article.
Yeah.
But he still writes it.
And
the simple fact that he's trying to make it sound like the cops were out there running around spraying 200 people
randomly. Yeah.
And obviously that wasn't the situation either.
And another thing, he doesn't even point out that he was a defendant or that he was a complainant in the lawsuit.
Sure.
And I mean, that's kind of a conflict of interest, I'd say.
It could be. But you know, once again, Mr. Estes says, I mean, it's bitter grapes.
Mm-hmm.
He's upset that he lost his lottery ticket. And now he's mad about it. And okay, I'm not going to go where I was going to go with anything further there. I was going to start speculating about stuff, and that's not what I'm here for. I'm just here for the facts.
Mm-hmm.
Sergeant Joe Friday, right? Just the facts. All right. So, and then speaking of facts, it is ironic that the officer accused of spraying the reactive chemical in the crowd during the attic incident is the same Hargraves that tased Williams in the back. True or false?
Hargraves didn't tase Williams.
Okay, so there we go. Once again, another falsism. Once again, he might not realize that it wasn't Hargraves. He might just be mistaken.
Well, yeah, but
once again, it's not true. It's another thing that's not true.
Yeah, and I mean that article or his opinion column came out how many days after? 3-4 days afterwards.
Yeah,
and I mean, can he not just go down to the police station and ask, hey, who's badge number 464, like they were told? Can he not have the other reporter go ask Jacob Jones, who wrote the story on the front page? I mean, as a journalist, you have to be responsible for what you put in the paper.
Oh.
I would know. I was on my high school paper.
Responsibility. Good word.
Yeah. And I mean,
looking in the mirror.
He doesn't use any. Like, he can easily check his facts, but he refuses to because he's essentially writing on pure emotion and appealing to emotion. And I mean, just because it's an opinion piece doesn't mean it should be void of fact.
Okay. So we move along. Bell tried to justify Sunday's incident to me, Boston, mm-hmm. by saying Williams touched him. This could be interpreted by the law as assaulting a police officer. And so to go beyond there, he says, in Virginia, it is against the law to wear saggy pants. Not long ago, it was against the law for a person of color to use a whites-only facility. So what he's done here is he's used, I guess it would be deductive reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? You put in a couple, you essentially say, okay, in one situation, it's against the law to wear saggy pants. Well, that's silly. Why would it be against the law? In another situation, it was against the law to use a white-only facility if you were a person of color. Well, that's bad, and we don't agree with that kind of law.
Yeah, that's right.
And there's the whole civil disobedience thing. So by putting these two ideas together, I can say, well, maybe some laws shouldn't be around. Maybe there should be laws that you don't have to follow just as the people of color did not follow the whites-only facilities situation in order to help break that mm-hmm. down. So it's almost like he's using these two incidences to make you think in your mind, well, yeah, why is it that Williams why is it that touching the officer is interpreted by law as assault? And as you pointed out earlier, 9836041, assault in the fourth degree is unwanted touching.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have anything to do whether the unwanted touching is on a police officer or a private citizen.
Yeah.
Unwanted touching is unwanted touching, period. So he's trying to make this argument sound like, well, if you touch a police officer, that's assault. But, you know, police officers can touch people and people can touch people. That's okay. But if you touch a police officer, it's assault. And we need to take a look at all these other dumb laws and maybe reevaluate where we stand on them.
Yeah.
So in my view, he's trying to use some argument, the way he's trying to argue this, in order to make it sound like Williams really didn't do anything wrong, because nobody would look back on the people of color who sat at the white-only counter.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody would look back on them and say they were in the wrong.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to look back and say that. So that's what he's trying to get here about Williams. People should be able to look and say, well, Williams didn't do anything wrong by touching Officer Bell. That's what he's trying to get us to think.
Yeah, and just the points that he makes, like by pointing specifically out Virginia and their saggy pants law. I mean, you can find ridiculous laws like that everywhere. Like, I believe up in Spokane or something, it was illegal to sell lollipops on a Sunday or something.
Sure.
And I mean, yeah, they're ridiculous, but it doesn't mean people don't still do it. I mean, you can find stuff like that everywhere, but I mean, touching a police, like assaulting a police officer, you can't do it anywhere.
Right.
I'm pretty sure it's a federal law. I would be more than willing to bet that it's a law in all 50 states.
And once again, it's not even necessarily just the assaulting a police officer. It's assault in general.
Yeah.
You can't assault somebody else.
No.
You can't. It's against the law.
Yeah.
And there's a reason why there's different levels of assault, though, because unwanted touching is definitely not as bad as hitting somebody over the head with a baseball bat. Both of them are assault, but one of them is going to get you a lot more jail time than the other.
Yeah.
And that goes the same with the police officer. Just as unwanted touching on the police officer is assault, just as it would be if I were to come up and touch somebody up on campus for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
They could get me for assault. And so the only issue with the police officer part of it, the assault on the police officer, is there are certain jobs that the state has identified that have the probability of assault maybe being a little bit higher, and they felt that it was necessary to enact a little bit of a stiffer penalty for assault on that person in order to help protect them and make people think.
Typically public servants.
Exactly. You know, and we talked a little bit earlier, firefighters, bus drivers, police officers, on and on and on, that if you what would have been considered fourth degree assault
mm-hmm.
gets bumped up to third degree assault. So it goes from a gross misdemeanor, which is up to a year in jail,
mm-hmm.
to a class C felony.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the difference is. So the idea is that they are offering a little more protection to these public servants because they are being targeted solely based on the job they're performing,
mm-hmm.
And the fact that sometimes they do unpopular things, but that's part of their job. And it's not that it's the person that's necessarily the bad guy. It's just that's what they have to do. That's their job.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it sucks sometimes, but you've got to do your job. You've got to follow the law. And people don't like that, and they tend to assault these people more often, and so you do something to protect them a little bit more by having a tougher penalty.
Yeah, and it's not like it's Officer Bell saying, oh, you can't touch me, I'm going to charge you with a third degree assault. It's the legislature that created this. I think that's one of the biggest things is people don't understand that the legislature creates all these laws. It's just the police are assigned the responsibility to enforce the laws.
Right.
And so if they really have a problem with it, take it up with their state legislature.
That's a great point. And actually, going along with that, and we see this all the time. If you don't like what a cop is doing to you on the street, for instance, you're being put under arrest, but you don't want to be put under arrest because really nobody does.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say you felt that the officer is wronging you because you don't think you committed the crime he's accusing you of committing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple ways of dealing with it. The correct way is to say, okay, cuff me up, take me to jail, do your stuff. I'm going to get my lawyer. We're going to slam you in court.
Well, or just prove that you're wrong in court.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I mean.
Okay. Because
in your point of view, the officer is 100% wrong.
Yeah.
So we're going to slam you in court. You're going to be. Your head's going to be spinning because you were so in the wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That's the right way of doing it.
Yeah.
The wrong way of doing it is fighting. Oh, you're mm-hmm. not arresting me, pushing away and running from the cop or hitting the cop. And also, the wrong time for a large group of citizens to all of a sudden start surrounding a police officer during an arrest mm-hmm. is during the arrest.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't like what he's doing, there's a process of filing complaints. You don't, obviously, if in the situation like the other night, they did not like what was going on
mm-hmm.
with what they saw. And so there was a group of people that followed down to the police station to file complaints.
Yeah.
That, by all means, was a good way of doing it because
yeah.
you were not trying to surround the officers. You weren't trying to hold them back from doing their job because then all of a sudden the officers are in a situation where it's officer safety once again.
Mm-hmm.
You don't let a person come within a foot of you to talk to you because you have to have some distance. There's the officer safety thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes the same thing with if there's two of you or three of you or four of you and you're arresting somebody and there's a large group of people that are very upset about the fact you're making this arrest,
mm-hmm.
their safety is very minimal at that point in time.
Yeah.
So the time to start arguing and screaming and yelling is not on scene.
No.
Because you're not going to get the person unarrested.
No.
The only thing you're going to do is cause more problems.
Yeah.
And so, realistically, there is a time and place for filing your complaints, and it's not at the very moment on scene. And it always cracks me up when you see something happen and people are like, what's your badge number? What's your badge number? I have a right to know what's your badge number. It's like, shut up. I mean, okay, go ahead, yell it all you want, but you sound like an idiot. And that's my point of view. That's my perspective.
Yeah.
I want to laugh at people who do that kind of stuff. You sound like an idiot. You're realistically, you're trying to intimidate the cop. You're mm-hmm. trying to intimidate them into not doing what they need to do.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, once again, that's my point of view. Maybe I'm wrong.
And no, and I think you make a great point. And like the, because there was such a large crowd there, like, I mean, and everybody was getting hostile. Like, they actually called in every available unit in Pullman to show up. So there ended up being like 16 officers on scene.
Okay.
Because I mean, crowd of 70 people versus at the time, like, I think there was about 8 officers there, like, okay. when the tasing first happened. And so, I mean, 8 versus 70, not good odds, no matter what you have.
Sure.
And, I mean, they're not obviously going to use lethal force.
Right.
Even though that's what they have the most of. They have lots of bullets. But, I mean, they're not going to use them because people don't have guns or knives or anything. They're just, they're just outraged. And if somebody had started a fight, I mean, it would have escalated even more than it already was.
Sure.
And it, really, in my opinion, being there, Martin Boston is the reason the scene escalated so much as it did. Because after he was pulled out and after Bell tried talking to him, he still yelled. Like, he could have easily just calmed down and started talking to him as a victim. But he chose to yell and yell and yell. And it riled up everyone else around.
And once again, we didn't really touch on this before, but you said he was yelling stuff back at the bouncer. Could you describe what he was yelling, what you heard him say?
I'd rather not. It was some pretty nasty stuff.
Okay, like swear words and things?
Lots of those. Lots of N-word hater stuff. Like,
really?
Yeah, it was basically saying that he was racist, all this stuff.
Okay.
So, I mean, he really kind of riled up everybody else. Because a lot of the people that were helping, like, separate them inside ended up coming outside because it was right around closing anyway.
Okay.
And so, I mean, they were there. They could hear him yelling. They were, like, either for him or against him, whatever. And so either way, it was just creating a big, like, divide.
Yeah, you almost got a brawl getting ready to start out there.
Yeah, and
the cops are going to be in the middle, and they don't want to be there.
No, they don't. I mean,
they want to go home.
Yeah, they do. They do want to go home at the end of the night. And so, I mean, they want to solve it right then and there. And so that's why they tried separating everybody, like, tried getting things under control. And the only real way to do that is to get more people there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's one thing that people don't understand is that officers need to get the upper hand.
Yes.
On a situation. And when they don't have it, they're going to call for more officers.
Right.
And so that's what happened at that scene. Is people don't understand why so many officers end up showing up. Because there was such a large crowd. Because the crowd was so hostile. And I mean, like I said, if somebody had started to attack an officer, more officers would have gone over there. But then somebody probably would have come up and started, like, joining in. Like a bystander. Like, I mean, it just would have turned into an all-out brawl.
Right.
And so there's strength in numbers. And that's what the officers use.
You know, that's funny you say that because it's the same kind of situation in a riot where you have some people who probably never would have done something bad like throwing stones at windows or throwing mm-hmm. rocks at cops or whatever else. They probably would have never done that, but then all of a sudden they get into this
mob mentality.
A mob mentality. There's strength in numbers. There's mm-hmm. anonymity
yeah.
in numbers. So they feel like they could do it and get away with it, and they're sort of caught up in the action.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because that kind of thing could happen real quickly. One or two people in the back of the group could have all of a sudden lobbed in a couple beer bottles or mm-hmm. rocks or something and hit somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And then things started going downhill.
Very easily.
And that's why you bring in extra people, because it's the whole idea, and this will get us into the use of force and the use of force continuum and, mm-hmm. and what force is and whatnot. But there's one last paragraph from Martin Boston's letter, opinion, column. I was going to say another word like misinformation piece. it is clear that law enforcement officers, including the Pullman police, continue to work in a seemingly corrupt manner. So he's outright calling the police corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, I'll stand by my statement. I believe that we have one of the best police forces in the state and the Pullman police, and that we have very good officers who are out there trying to protect and serve all the citizens of Pullman.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter whether you're a student or not a student. It doesn't matter what race you are. It doesn't matter where you came from. It doesn't matter what kind of car you drive or anything like that. The cops are here to help people, and that's what they mm-hmm. want to do. They want to help you. They don't care about this kind of stuff, even if you do. And that's the thing, is the cops don't care about it, but Boston does.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the one who's making an issue out of it. So He's calling our cops corrupt, which I think is just, that's just not even, that's not even something he could substantiate because there isn't the corruption there.
Mm-hmm.
He's, and that's really frustrating because he's using such a harsh word, calling him corrupt, and then later on saying that it's a lynch mob
mm-hmm.
when he has no substantiating information at all. And it's really a disservice to the police officers because they, like I said, they are out there to assist people when they need help.
Mm-hmm.
They're not picking and choosing which people they're going to go help. And then he tries to say that all black men are treated as aggressors no matter what by the cops and that no black person trusts any of the cops in Pullman. So now he's trying to speak for every black person in the city of Pullman by saying they don't trust the police here.
Mm-hmm.
And what's funny is that he talks about the lynch mob that continues to perpetuate racial stereotypes. Who's the one who's been doing racial stereotypes throughout his article, talking about how the media is out against black people, how the cops are out against black people, that when a white guy beats up a black guy, nobody does anything mm-hmm. about it? He's the one over and over and over again trying to promote racial stereotypes, not the police.
I mean, yeah, I can't blame him for trying to point it out, but, I mean, at least point it out when you have facts to support it. Like, I mean, he really doesn't support his argument very well at all. So, I mean, I don't even know where I was going with that, but
that's right. So anyway, that was pretty much the end of his. That's pretty much the end of his opinion piece that was put in the newspaper. I think that you've done a pretty good job describing what you've seen. You've done a pretty good job describing what really happened out there that night, and I'm hoping that We've been able to touch on a lot of the things that did take place out there, and we've touched on quite a few of the things that did or did not happen. Hopefully, we've talked a little bit about the police officers, and you know, you obviously have agreed with me here. I believe we have a great police force. I believe that we have police officers who don't look at race, who don't look at that kind of stuff. They look at finding the criminal and helping the victim.
Mm-hmm.
They're out. They do all sorts of stuff to help people out. But unfortunately, they're always, because they're cops, they're all automatically assumed to be a bad guy
mm-hmm.
when they're enforcing the law. And they're enforcing a law that is put into place by legislatures that we elect.
Mm-hmm.
So like you said, you don't like the law, talk to your legislature.
Mm-hmm.
Yelling at the cop when he's arresting you for the thing that, you know, is against the law isn't going to help you do anything at all. So we were going to start talking a little bit about the use of force continuum, what necessary means and everything like that, because I think that's very important to our conversation here. But before we get there, we got Batman on the phone. He's a columnist for the He's a columnist for the Pullman Moscow Daily News.
Okay.
He is a former co-host of the PES, and he runs the local blog, Pelusatix.com. Batman, Tom Forbes. How you doing, Tom?
Pretty good, Scotty. How about yourself?
Doing pretty good. You got Brandon on the headphones over here as well today.
How you doing, Brandon?
Doing all right. How are you?
Good job. Good. Doing
so
fine.
You've been listening in on us?
A little bit, yeah.
Good?
Yeah. It sounds like a good discussion.
Yeah, it's been pretty good so far. So what are your thoughts on the use of tasers and force and policing and our cops in the city of Pullman? What do you feel about them?
I've kind of blogged about this a little bit. I've kind of come at it from the standpoint of how irresponsible the Evergreen was to have allowed such an inflammatory editorial to be published, particularly by someone who had a clear bias and axe to grind with the police department. I think it's very unprofessional. But as far as the matter itself goes, I think a taser is probably, it's certainly a lot better than a pistol whipping or a billy club. I mean,
I agree with you there.
You know, they continue to search for, you know, less than lethal means to shoot people, and maybe it's not perfect, but I think, like you say, it's a lot better than pepper spray or some of the other alternatives.
I agree.
And as far as our Pullman police go, I fully support them. I think it's a great. We have a great police department. I think we're blessed for such a small town to have such a professional, well-trained police department. I think this is much ado about nothing, really. It's You know, I think college students in general maybe tend to look a bit suspiciously at police, of course. I mean, I think when I was a student, I probably felt the same way about the...
Did you have long hair as a student, Tom?
What's that?
Did you have long hair as a student?
Not exceedingly.
Did it touch your shoulders?
No. But I can remember not liking the campus police very much when I was in school. And, you know, it's traditional. And then, so you kind of have an attitude anyway where I think students maybe look a little askance at police. And then you have these radicals, frankly, on campus that then try to, you know, prey on feelings of suspicion and try to whip up something that's not there
sure.
You know, for their own political purposes. And I think that's what we're seeing here. You know, people so desperately want there to be a racism problem in Pullman for their own purposes, you know, and if they can't find one, they're going to make one up.
Yeah, and
they'll
take
anything that comes along as an excuse to do that.
Right. I think we're definitely seeing that in this situation.
Is there no racism in Pullman? I can't say that, but let's see some substantial proof. You know, before you start yelling the cops are racist, let's have some proof before you level such a serious accusation.
Exactly. And what's funny is when you level that accusation, which you do by saying it,
yeah.
And then you turn around and say, well, I don't have proof of it.
Right, but I'll go ahead and say it anyway.
Yeah, but you've leveled that accusation.
Right, I'll level it, and plus I'll level it in the paper that most everyone in Pullman reads so that thought will just be out there.
Right. Well, isn't that the paper of record in Pullman?
Yeah, the paper of record, yeah. Yeah, and the one that actively solicits community input.
When it suits their purpose.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. So
no, it's just your typical undergraduate Marxism at work. That's all it is. I mean, I wouldn't care. I made this point on the blog. You know, if this were the Riverdale High School Reporter or something like that only 20 people read, who cares? They can say whatever they want to. But while I don't consider the Evergreen to be the Pullman paper of record, it certainly is the most widely read and distributed paper in Pullman because it is free and thousands of copies are distributed daily, not just on campus, but everywhere.
Right.
So fine, let the students have their little Marxist party, let them think that it's the police, it's the military corporate establishment, you know, keeping everybody down, whatever they want to call it, you know, racism. But the problem is, you make those accusations, you know, the police are not students. They're real people. This is their job. This is their career. And when you make accusations like that, you are impugning a man's reputation. You know, and as I said, possibly putting a man's life at risk. You know, the last thing you want to get on the street is a reputation as a racist cop.
Sure.
That, I mean, you know, who knows what that could lead to? I mean, like I said, yes. You know, people say, well, the students have to learn from their mistakes. It's like, yeah, but why does the officer involved have to learn from their mistakes? He didn't do anything wrong.
Sure.
And so it's really wrong for him to be drugged through the mud because of all this.
Definitely. So you got any good thoughts for us for today?
Well, I do. This is the benefit of some breaking news that just went up on the blog, and that was Palooza6.com again. Looks like I had blogged earlier, or on Friday, about, PARD was going to have a publicity stunt tonight under the guise of education.
Oh, that's right. Yes, up in the building.
With their little quote-unquote sweatshop panel discussion.
Yeah.
Well, apparently, I guess they were afraid that the media would ignore them, which I imagine they probably would have. I bet only the Evergreen would have covered the event. So, feeling that they were going to be ignored, I guess now it looks like they're going to be staging some sort of a publicity-type event over at the Walmart in Moscow this afternoon.
Oh, super.
Yeah, just got word that they're going to try to hold a quote-unquote press conference at the Walmart in Moscow, which, of course, Walmart will not allow. It's private property. They're not going to stand for that. I'm sure it's going to be the people that they were going to have speak tonight, you know, make demands that Walmart treat its workers more humanely, blah, 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 blah. But I'm thinking what they're hoping for is that Walmart calls the cops, you know, in Moscow to get them evicted off the property, have a big scene in front of the media, just the thing that they're looking for.
Of course, because then that gets them the front page coverage
exactly.
That they need.
So I hope everyone completely ignores them. That's what I urge all the local media to do. This is a completely transparent, self-serving attempt to desperately gain some publicity for their fading cause.
Exactly. So us putting it on the radio and the blog, we're definitely ignoring them, right, Tom?
No, you have to tell people to ignore them.
Oh, that's what we're doing.
Exactly.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you for the call, Tom.
Thank you, Scotty. I'll talk to you next week.
All right, have a good day.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye. Once again, Tom Forbes, also known as Batman, the Caped Crusader, saving the city from the evil clutches of Pard, on the phone. All right, we got about, about 9 to, well, depending on which clock you believe, anywhere from 9 to 13 minutes to go until we got our replacement Steds here in the studio. And I got a CD player open and ready for the first CD whenever you want to put it in there. Anyway, I was hoping we'd have a little bit more time to discuss this, but we definitely need to touch on necessary. You used that word earlier today.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how many Crim J majors like memorize this in Crim J 101 or what, but necessary means that no reasonable effective alternative to the use of force appeared to exist. The amount of force used was reasonable to affect the lawful purpose intended.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, that's a memorized thing. You memorize it. You say it really fast because mm-hmm. you know exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what's interesting is if you slow it down and you break it down, necessary means that no reasonable effective alternative to the use of force appeared to exist.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, I needed to do something, and of all the options I had out there, the only reasonable one that I could see that would work at this point in time
mm-hmm.
was using force.
Mm-hmm.
So no reasonable effective alternative to the use of force appeared to exist. And the amount of force used was reasonable to affect the lawful purpose intended.
Mm-hmm.
So the amount of force I used was enough to get the job done, but I didn't go extreme on it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great little definition. If you really think about it and listen to what it says and understand what it means, essentially, I had to arrest that person.
Mm-hmm.
I had to stop them from doing X. And because nothing else was working, I had to use force.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of my last options. And because I had to use force, I was very careful to make sure that I used just enough force to get the job done, but not so much force that it was excessive.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the definition of necessary. But let's talk about what is force. I mean, what do you, in your studies and everything else like that, what is force?
Well, we actually had a discussion just the other day in my ethics class, MJ Ethics. And really, it's hard to draw the line between what is force. Like, technically, officer presence is force.
There you go.
But I mean,
was hoping you're going to go there.
Most people don't really consider that force, but just having an officer present, like, typically will calm the situation down.
Right.
And having more officers calms it down even more. But I mean, there's officer presence. There's just commands, like
verbal
talking
commands
to somebody.
Stop.
Yeah, stop, don't move.
Right.
Get on the ground, whatever mm-hmm. happens to be. Don't touch me, whatever. Then there's physical stuff, like going hands-on, like putting somebody in a wrist lock or guiding them a certain way, whatever it may be. Then there's things like actually using a weapon or some sort of weapon, like pepper spray. There's batons, there's tasers, all the way on, there's headlocks to make somebody pass out if need be, or there's lethal force in using guns. And I mean, that's typically what you'll see.
Okay, so we talk about you sort of talked about force. You sort of put it up what some people might call a use of force continuum.
Yeah.
Where in a typical use of force continuum, you go from the least amount of force to the most amount of force. So officer presence,
mm-hmm.
that's the least amount of force. The fact you're there is usually enough to stop the incident from happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, we go to verbal commands. And then we go to, at one time, with if you disregard tasers, pepper spray, if you're just going with what the cops used to traditionally had, then you would go to hands-on. You'd have the arm mm-hmm. The arm bars, the hair holds, the
takedowns,
and then from there you would have a stick, your batons, and then you'd go to deadly force.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they came in with this pepper spray, which they found was better for force than hitting somebody, because what was happening, or even going hands-on, because when you go hands-on, there's a higher probability that one of the two people or both will get hurt.
Exactly.
Or there's a probability you could break a bone, you could get bruised and have, you know, signs of injury for weeks on end.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with pepper spray, you effectively stop the person from doing what you're trying to stop them from doing, and about 45 minutes later, all pain, all signs of everything is 100% gone.
Not 100%, but well, for the most part, yeah.
If you're a man, it's gone in 45 minutes.
Yeah.
So anyway, but you know, in about 45 minutes, the pain that you're feeling is pretty much gone. And those trailing last little bit, there's not even really a lot of pain. It's just really localized in a couple little areas left and for the most part. But they found that by doing that, nobody goes hands-on. The effects of the force is gone within 45 minutes to an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And they've effectively arrested somebody. And there was actually, though it's painful, there was a very little amount of force. There was no hands on there. The chances of somebody having long-term injuries is almost nothing by using it. So therefore, it's a lower level of force than hitting or touching somebody is. So they put that in the use of force continuum right after verbal commands and just before going hands-on.
Mm-hmm.
So then you get tasers coming in, and you have a taser, which is similar to pepper spray, whereas it's a relatively short-term amount of pain that causes compliance, and it has a very low probability of any long-term injuries. The thing about tasers, though, unlike pepper spray, is A, tasers are really new, and B, they loud, and they look scary. Mm-hmm. When somebody gets tased, it looks scary. It looks like they are just writhing in unbearable pain. They always throw around 50,000 volts, 50,000 volts. You're going to damn near kill somebody with 50,000 volts. And, you know, on and on and on. I mean, there's all this misinformation about tasers going out. But realistically, anybody who's been hit by a taser, a baton, and a pepper spray, I guarantee everybody's going to get back in the taser line.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to get hit with the pepper spray again.
I've been hit with pepper spray, and I've been hit with a taser, and I would gladly take a taser over pepper spray any day. It lasts 5 seconds at most, unless they choose to taser you again because you're not complying.
Right.
And after the 5 seconds is up, you don't feel any pain.
It's gone.
Like,
whereas
five
pepper
seconds,
spray, in 5 seconds, you're still hurting.
Yeah, like 5 seconds for a taser, 45 minutes to an hour for pepper spray, weeks to months for baton, depending on the severity of an injury that occurs.
Yeah.
So, I mean, really, like, tasering, it's effective. It pretty much paralyzes you for 5 seconds. Like, you cannot move.
Right. And that's the whole point, is by doing that, the officer is not going to get hurt by going hands-on. The suspect is not going to get hurt because the officer is not hitting them. The officer is not doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, the suspect should be thankful because after 5 seconds, the pain is gone.
Mm-hmm.
But if he gets pepper sprayed, not only is he hurt for 45 minutes to an hour, it's just not a fun experience to go through because there is that pain for a while. Your eyes hurt like crazy.
Yeah.
And as we saw in the attic incident, there is the potential, especially indoors, of that stuff getting to other people
for second
and having secondary exposure with the taser.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who gets tased is having the exposure, not all these other people. So the thing about the taser being a lower level of force is very true, though, like I said, it's a very scary looking thing, and people just don't understand really what they don't understand tasers very well yet. There's a lot of misinformation about tasers, and unfortunately, we are almost totally out of time, but what this goes back to, and you had alluded to it earlier, and I said, you know, remind me, we're going to talk about this. It's the media and how the media really warps the perception of people in law enforcement and CSI.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about 2 seconds. They throw the DNA down. Doom. They got the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
They have programs that will sit there and clarify resolution of a photo 1,000 times better, and they'll be able to see perfect images of people. And, you know, people in real life, you know, you go talk to somebody who really knows about photos, and they're like, is there any way to make this image that's really blurry perfectly clear and show detail that's not actually visible right now? And it's like, the detail's not there. It's not there.
Yeah.
So, but it's one of those things. There's a lot of Hollywood going on there, and people start to think this is real, that it could be done. There's a lot of stuff like that goes on with the police work. How often do you hear, well, why did you shoot him? You should have shot the gun out of his hand. Oh, come on, be real. You're not going to have a cop who, from 50 yards, pulls out his handgun, shoots a handgun out of somebody else's hand, twirls it around his finger, and puts it back in the holster. That's Hollywood. It's not real life.
Yeah.
And the problem is that the media is warping the perspective of people in their in what we see about tasers and OC and policing in general, and it really is a disservice to what's going on. And I guess for me, though people have had issues with the tasers and they think that that there's excessive force going on there. And you know, I think I might have to pick this up next week and talk more excessive force and tasers and specifically speak to some of this additional conversation we've had in Facebook since the original stuff. I think we've mainly touched on what happened in that specific incident. I hope that we've talked about the fact that, yes, tasers are a lower level of force than hitting somebody. Mm-hmm. So when Boston said there's enough cops, they could have taken him down. Well, yeah, they could have, but that's more force. Don't you want us to use the least amount of force possible? Yeah. Tasers look scary, no doubt about it, but it's really not a lot of force. It really isn't.
And just look at the injuries Williams said that he had in the news article. He said he had a banged up elbow and two taser pricks in his back.
Yeah.
Which are really small, and actually, I didn't even see them in his back. So,
okay.
I don't even know the validity of that statement, but, I mean, a banged up elbow and two little pricks.
Yeah.
Versus probably a bunch of scuff marks and bruises and...
Having a knee on your neck while you're trying to cut.
And probably a bunch of rashes from hitting the concrete. I mean, which would you rather have?
Exactly. So, taser is a lower level of force. The Pullman police officers we have, the WSU police officers, our local police forces are a very fine force. We're lucky to have who we have. Even Tom Forbes was talking about how lucky we are for being a small town to have what we have here. And that I have no doubt that given the opportunity to... actually see these police officers work and actually giving them the opportunity to work, like in the case of what happened there, Officer Bell wasn't given any opportunity to do his work to ascertain where the assault took place and how this person got assaulted. He wasn't given a chance to do any work, and then he's being accused of not doing work. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, you got to give them a chance. You got to give them information for them to react on, just like anybody. They're not supermen. They can't just like see through walls and automatically know things by information given to them. So I wish we had a lot more time, because there's so much more I want to get into, especially with that other taser stuff. But like I said, next week we'll talk more about that, because I think it's really important to talk about some of these issues that were brought up about the use of force and the use of tasers on people. That is it excessive force? If somebody starts resisting, is it excessive force to immediately go to a taser versus arguing with them for 10 minutes or maybe pushing them a little bit more? You know, at what point is going to a taser quickly excessive force? And there's been a lot of posts on there of there's a video that was shown where a lady was told, get out of the car or I'll tase you.
Mm-hmm.
Get out of the car or I'll tase you. Get out of the car or I will tase you. This is your final warning. Get out of the car or I will tase you. She got tased after that. And people are like, oh, excessive force. It's like, she was told not once, not twice, not three times, but four times. And that was a final warning.
Mm-hmm.
She still didn't get out of the car. It was her choice to not get out of the car. She got tased because it was her choice. And
she knew what the consequences.
She knew the consequences, and the consequences were there. And this goes back to everything that I've been saying this year, is look in the mirror. You've got to look in the mirror. The person who chose to not get out of the car is the person who got tased because of their choices. It's not the cop's fault. It's the person who did not get out of the car, and it was their choice to not do it. They need to look in the mirror and say, it's my fault I got tased, not the cop's fault.
Mm-hmm.
So once again, Brandon, I appreciate you coming on the show. And Ted, I'm sorry I ran into your show. You can, you could, okay. He's like, shut up and play my music, dude. All right. Once again, Brandon, this is Scotty, the PSKZUU 90.7 FM.